This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to Washington Watch. Hey, just 2 days until we kick off the 12th Annual Values Voter Summit here in Washington, D.C., and it is shaping up to be one of the best ever. This year's speakers include House Majority Whip Steve Scalise, Chairman of the House Freedom Caucus, Mark Walker, Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler, Republican Study Committee Chairman Mark Walker, Chairman of the House Pro-Life Caucus Chris Smith, Dr. Bill Bennett, Laura Ingraham, Duck Dynasty's Phil Robertson, Todd Starnes of Fox News, Steve Bannon, Judge Roy Moore of Alabama, Sebastian Gorka, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, and there's more, but that's all I can say for now. Oh, I can say that there will be a screening of Kevin Sorbo's new movie, Let There Be Light. So anyway, there's still room for you at this year's Values Voter Summit. Join us as we seize the moment at the 12th Annual Values Voter Summit here in Washington, D.C. That's this Friday. To find out more, go to TonyPerkins.com, and I'll save you a spot. But for today, LGBTQ activists are saying the Trump administration's 20 principles of religious freedom are targeting them, that these religious liberty protections are a license to discriminate. Really? Erecting barricades to government-based religious hostility is a license to discriminate? In whose world? We'll talk about it with one of Congress's foremost First Amendment attorneys, Louisiana Congressman Mike Johnson, in just a moment. Also, I mentioned yesterday the Department of Defense is distancing itself from the Southern Poverty Law Center. Breitbart reporter Ian Mason has the latest on that story. And in the category of I didn't think it could get any crazier, California Governor Jerry Brown signed into law SB 219, a measure that could send people to the slammer for using the wrong pronoun for transgendered people. Jonathan Keller from the California Policy Council explains later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T. Perkins. All right, as we reported last week, and I even talked about it yesterday, the Department of Justice issued legal guidance across the federal government that outlines how federal agencies should interpret religious freedom protections. The First Amendment, it allows individuals to live and work in a way consistent with their faith. But the left and some members of the mainstream media contend it has nothing to do with religious freedom. Rather, it's a license to discriminate. Joining us now is Louisiana Congressman Mike Johnson. Mike represents the 4th Congressional District of Louisiana. That's the northwest portion of the state. Back home, we call them Yankees. But he joins us now. Mike, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Good to be with you, as always.
Hey, is this restatement of our First Amendment freedom a license to discriminate?
Of course not. It's absurd to say that. Anyone who looks at this memoranda that's been produced by the Office of the Attorney General will recognize that it's a broad restatement of our most fundamental principles. I mean, these are ideals and an understanding of the law that dates back to the founders' era. There's nothing new under the sun here. And for any modern day activist to suggest it's somehow targeting them is just patently absurd. This simply just reiterates what we've always believed and understood as Americans to be our most essential freedoms.
But this goes way beyond just the issues that those in the LGBTQ XYZ community are concerned about. I mean, this deals with, for instance, the Catholic Charities refused government contracts when it comes to human trafficking because they would not refer for abortion during the Obama administration. So this goes much further, and it just seems like everything is about them when it comes to government policy.
That's right, and what this is going to do, I think, really is roll back many of what's been referred to as the anti-faith policies of the previous administration. And you and I lived and worked through those days, and opposed much of what was coming down from on high in the Oval Office. And really, it was an effort to to steamroll the most fundamental freedoms that we enjoy. I'm so grateful that the Department of Justice is getting out front on this, of course, following President Trump's executive order from this summer,
right,
to correct those wrongs and to say once again that we're going to value the most fundamental freedom that we have. I mean, this is a statement of 20 broad principles of religious liberty and then some guidance on how all these federal agencies and government bureaucracies can work this back into the system. And my goodness, it's long overdue.
It's been fascinating to me, Mike. I've been doing a number of interviews on this, and reporters are saying, "Well, wait a minute. You know, this is turning back the president's previously established policy," referring to President Obama, "established policy on transgender bathrooms and transgenders in the military." I said, "You know, those things were done on the way out the door." You had attorneys general in over half the states opposing the federal government on that. So this idea, just because Barack Obama did it on his way out, that should forever be the policy in this country, when for the previous 240 years we respected religious liberty.
No, that's an excellent point. In fact, I was meeting with some folks on the Hill this afternoon, and I made that very very acknowledgement that look, there's nothing radical about this. What was radical is what the previous administration and what President Obama did on his way out of office. You're exactly right. He issued many extra constitutional executive orders. He far exceeded the bounds of what he was allowed to do under our system, under our Constitution, under our law. And so for our new president, President Trump, to simply roll that back, he's just reaffirming the rule of law. There's nothing radical going on here at all. And it's sort of a sad statement, really, Tony, that a lot of people regard it otherwise, because how quickly we forget our essential freedoms, you know? And it's easy to take freedom away from a people if they're not even able to define what their freedoms are. And that's the kind of the disturbing thing about all this. You know, my background is in constitutional law, and I'm a strict constructionist and originalist. I was in the federal courts for almost 20 years defending these essential freedoms, and we saw kind of the gradual progression of this, that people, you know, they forget these essential liberties. We've got to stand for them, and this is due attention to a critical issue. We're certainly grateful that this step's been taken.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday afternoon. Louisiana Congressman Mike Johnson, my guest in this first segment. He represents the 4th Congressional District of Louisiana. And we are discussing the guidelines that came out from the Department of Justice last Friday dealing with religious liberty. This was a part of the president's executive order that he issued on May the 4th, calling on the Department of Justice to issue these guidance government-wide. All of the federal agencies have to protect and promote religious freedom. And one of the things that in those fundamental principles that they stated, Congressman, religious liberty, asserting not only that religious liberty is a fundamental right of paramount importance, but that free exercise of religion includes the right to act or abstain from actions in accordance with one's religious belief, and that this right extends to both persons and organizations. That's really been the rub in most recent years, is forcing people to do things that run counter to their religious freedom.
That's exactly right. And the guidance makes very clear, look, we've always understood the free exercise clause to protect not just the right to believe, but or the right to worship, which is what President Obama tried to sort of morph it into or limit the scope of it. He said it's your freedom to worship. That's much more than that. You have the ability as an American, as a human being, to live in accordance with your sincerely held religious beliefs, to live in accordance with the dictates of your own conscience. That's essential to who we are as Americans. It always has been. It's essential, even more than that, to who we are as humans, you know, and that's why the founders listed, we always say, religious freedom as the first liberty. It is, in a literal sense, our first freedom, listed right there in the Bill of Rights, because they recognize that this is so fundamental to who we are as a people. And so by the Department of Justice just coming out and reiterating this and sort of as a companion effort, the Department of Health and Human Services, of course, exempting religious entities from that Obamacare or Obama contraceptive mandate that we fought in courts all across the country, we're simply going back to what we always understood prior to just the last few years to be fundamental freedoms as Americans.
And what that's what really gets me here is that what is happening is we're simply going back to what the law and or what the understanding of the law was, you know, 8 years ago, prior to Barack Obama. But the left, they've changed these laws. They were very successful. Barack Obama used his bully pulpit, and he unilaterally, in many cases, changed these laws. And the left, I think, is incensed by the fact that a Republican is actually undoing these policies. And that is rare. I'll have to give you that. That's rare that a Republican would actually undo these damaging policies. But there's a sense of entitlement on the left that goes all the way to these established laws. They think once they're done, regardless of election outcomes, they should stay that way.
Well, that's right. And what they've been working on is an agenda for the last several decades, of course, leading up to when President Obama took office, is this rigorous sort of dichotomy that they were trying to work into, you know, this separation of church and state and all of that. And they convinced an entire generation of Americans that your religion is something separate than what you do in your regular everyday life, you know. So you can be quote unquote religious, they would sneer at us and say, yeah, you can worship on Sunday morning for now in the safe four walls of your church or your synagogue or what have you, but don't bring it into the public square on Monday morning. Don't even think about discussing that at the water cooler at work or out in the public square, because your religion is something separate from your everyday life. And that dichotomy worked its way into the culture and then was effectively almost codified under the Obama administration. But that's not who we are as Americans. That is not the best of our traditions. And as the Supreme Court has acknowledged many times over the years, our religious heritage is deeply embedded in who we are as a people. We are a religious people whose institutions presuppose a supreme being, as the court famously said back in the 50s. That hasn't changed. We just had an activist in the Oval Office, and finally now we're rolling that back.
You know, there's nothing, I believe, that is more counter to Scripture. In fact, the words of Jesus, who said, you know, who lights a candle and puts it under a bushel? In fact, don't hide your light. And that's what the policies of the left are trying to do, is quarantine our faith within the four walls of a church.
They are, and they had much success over that. Over the last several decades, of course, but now I think this gives us an opportunity and for everyone to talk about this openly again, to bring this back out into the free marketplace, to encourage everyone to live in accordance with their sincerely held religious beliefs. It is an admonition of Scripture, as you say, for all of us as Christians to be the salt and light. But this is a good thing, and we embrace the free marketplace of ideas, and that's where we can present these arguments and demolish the false arguments and strongholds as the Apostle Paul wrote about. This is what's best about America, is the ability to have that free speech and to live out that faith.
All right, Congressman Mike Johnson, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks for joining me.
You too, my friend. Keep it up.
All right, Mike Johnson from Louisiana's 4th Congressional District. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Look, I think we have a mandate to let our light shine. That means to take our truth and live it in every aspect of our lives and not allow it to be put under a bushel or shoved within the four walls of a church. All right, don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch.
We've gone from give me liberty or give me death to take care of me, please. What has happened to the American spirit? Our colleges were once bastions of free speech. Now they're bastions of speech codes. Our culture once rewarded independence. Now it rewards victimhood. Parents once taught their kids how to fend for themselves. Now any parent who tries may get a visit from the police. In a talk about his new book, Not a Daycare, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, takes a hard look at what's happening around the country, including demands for safe spaces and trigger warnings at universities like Yale, Brandeis, and Oberlin, and digs in his heels against the sad and dangerous dumbing down of the American spirit. Dr. Piper has become known for his passionate defense of intellectual freedom, and he challenges the intolerant tolerance of today's academic community. Go to frc.org/speakers to watch. Again, that's frc.org/speakers.
We need you in Washington, D.C. That's right. America is built on the courageous spirit of its people, and it is our duty to preserve the great nation by sustaining religious liberty, defending the unborn, and protecting the family. Take a stand for faith, family, and freedom at the Values Voters Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. Hear from invited and confirmed speakers like President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Michelle Bachmann, Secretary Ben Carson, Ambassador Nikki Haley, Kellyanne Conway, Dana Loesch, Franklin Graham, Ollie North, Alveda King, Kevin Sorbo, Bill Robertson, and many more. This is the place to network and meet up with people and organizations that share a Christian worldview and to discuss important issues that will shape the future of our country. Join us at the Values Voters Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. Register now at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Hear Mr. Arnakis discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. All right, the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, the Pentagon has purged its use of material from the far-left anti-Christian Southern Poverty Law Center. They had been using SPLC as a training resource on extremism, but I guess they found them to be too extreme. The Department of Defense Equal Opportunity Management Institute previously used SPLC as a resource on the quote-unquote hate groups, but not anymore. This is now someone who's covered this topic, Breitbart reporter Ian Mason. Ian, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Tony. This story is really kind of a culmination of something that's been going on since 2012 with the SPLC and the DOD. That's really when this had sort of first become an issue after the FRC shooting. And now this is sort of the final confirmation that it's been dropped as a resource that it had been used for years during that time.
Well, this is, the Department of Justice, others have moved away from them. I mean, is their reputation catching up with them, or what's happening?
Well, it's hard to say how much is a reputational issue and how much is sort of a shift in administration, because this is, like I said, sort of the second major report on this issue here in 2013, shortly after the FRC shooting. Judicial Watch had done a FOIA request and had found that while they'd stopped using the SPLC's hate map, which is, of course, how Corkins had found the FRC's office, they still used. Right. They still cited the SPLC as an acceptable resource, and then so this is a second FOIA request that was done just this September, which showed that all references to the group had been removed from training material, which is the opposite of what had happened in 2013. But again, it's sort of unclear whether that's a cumulative effect on their reputation or whether it's simply a change in administration since then.
Yeah, it looks like, based on some of this, that this was happening during the Obama administration, that even they realized that these guys were, you know, not a credible source, but they didn't want to go public with that. So now that the that documentation is being released, it shows that more and more of these federal agencies that had used them are backing away from them. How far, they've got a reach that goes beyond the federal government into local governments and our schools. This latest round of exposure that they received after Charlottesville, but then people began to dig into their financing and such, how much has that hurt them, do you think, in terms of the public getting to know them?
Well, so it's sort of a give and take in that regard, because while the reputation certainly suffers every time someone, like you say, does dig into financing, into their history, they're sort of lumping in groups with, unquestionably abhorrent groups of really quite questionable existence. That damages their reputation, but it certainly hasn't damaged their funding. I mean, since Charlottesville, they've had multi-million dollar donations from Apple, from J.P. Morgan Chase. So whatever they do suffer in reputational effects, it doesn't seem to affect their financing.
Yeah, the left's never worried about their reputation. But in terms from a governmental standpoint, is it not time that SPLC be held accountable?
Oh, of course. And I think it may be that this is a sign that they've become a little too hot to handle, at least in government services.
Yeah. Well, let's hope so, because as you said, what they do is reckless and it's dangerous when you use these labels. Ian, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Ian Mason with Breitbart. This is, it's good that people are getting to see this in federal, the government getting pressure to back away from them, because what they are is an activist organization, which they have every right to do. Every right to do, okay? This is America. I served in our nation's military for everyone's freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom of association, and you have the right to be wrong. And so the Southern Poverty Law Center has a right to be here, okay? But what they don't have is the right to become the decider of who gets to speak. And what they have made a history of doing in the last couple of decades, increasingly, is they're a policy advocate. They advocate and agitate for liberal policies. We're an advocacy organization. We advocate and we'll agitate for conservative, biblical policies, okay? I don't have a problem with that. As Mike Johnson was talking about earlier, let's have that debate. Let's have a full, fair debate. I'm not afraid of standing up for what I believe in, because the truth will prevail. That doesn't mean everybody will understand it and embrace it, but the truth will stand the test of time and the attacks that the left launches at it. But you see, what they want to do, they don't want to have the debate. They want to silence the people on the other side, and that's what they do with this labeling. But it's become so recklessly dangerous that this labeling has led to attacks of violence, like the shooting that took place at the Family Research Council. And my good friend Steve Scalise, who will be at the Values Voter Summit, he was targeted by the Southern Poverty Law Center and at gunmen, had visited. We don't know the extent of his information that he got from Southern Poverty Law Center, because he was shot and killed by Capitol Police. Anyway, find out more. Go to splcexposed.com. Got a hilarious video up there talking about the SPLC and their hidden loot, the $69 million plus, somewhere between $69 million and $350 million they have in offshore accounts. Poking a little fun at them. SPLCExposed.com. All right. Still more Washington Watch to come. California, the left coast, at it again. Jerry Brown, Governor Moonbeam, he's out there doing it. All right, we're going to talk about that, and we're going to be taking your phone calls here a little bit later on Washington Watch. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday afternoon. Coming up this weekend, the Values Voter Summit kicks off Friday here in Washington, D.C. Hey, there's still time to get here. You can even walk if you're not too far away. But anyway, you got plenty of time to get here. Going to be a great, great weekend. Going to be one of the best ever. I hope to be able to tell you a lot more about it here, maybe even before the show's over, but definitely by tomorrow. Anyway. We've been following this next story pretty closely. It was a piece of legislation. Look, and I've, as you know, I served nearly a decade in the Louisiana legislature and then been tracking things, been involved here for 15 years. And so just because something gets introduced into law doesn't mean it's going to become law. A lot of crazy ideas are introduced. And so we were closely or, you know, watching Senate Bill 219, because it was so crazy. But, I mean, I know California is crazy, but I didn't think they were this crazy. It was actually signed into law by California Governor Jerry Brown last week, and it states that healthcare workers who choose not to address transgendered patients by their preferred pronouns could face fines and even time in the slammer. Joining us now is Jonathan Keller. He's the CEO of the California Family Council. Jonathan, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks as always. Good to be with you and look forward to seeing you this week at VVS.
Well, glad you're going to be with us. First, are you guys safe from those wildfires out there?
Currently, yes, but you know, we have a lot of friends and family that are in danger of those fires. It's crazy. You know, on the one coast in your neck of the woods in Florida, we have all the rain, and out here we can't seem to keep the state from going up in flames. So,
well, it certainly, you know, it makes you think of Jesus' words about all the stuff that's going to be happening in the end of times. But, well, we'll be, as we are praying for the folks that are recovering from the hurricanes, we are praying for the folks there in California that are facing these wildfires. Let's talk about Senate Bill 219. Now it's the law in California. Explain to our listeners what this actually does.
Well, Tony, it's so unbelievable. I mean, I have to struggle even to fathom that this is going to be going into effect in January. But essentially, this was introduced by a senator, a gay individual, a member of the LGBT caucus named Senator Scott Wiener from the San Francisco area. And essentially, this bill raises the level of penalties on misgendering someone. Well, if any of your listeners have not heard of that word before, to misgender someone is what the left calls it when we call someone by their biology. If someone is born a male, they are a biological male. We believe Genesis chapter 1, verse 27 says God created men, male and female, or he created people, males and females. And in the left's mind, if we refuse to deny biological reality and we refuse to use transgender pronouns, that amounts to misgendering someone. And under SB 219, if someone working in a healthcare facility, a residential nursing home or hospice care, if they repeatedly refuse to deny biology and refuse to use these made-up transgender pronouns, they can actually be fined up to $1,000 and even potentially face jail time.
That's crazy. I mean, we're talking about long-term, you know, in nursing homes, different places like that. This is not only a violation of the workers, but what about the people who are also in those facilities that say, for instance, a woman who doesn't want a roommate who is a male, but he says he's a female, and so she's forced to live with it.
Absolutely. And this is something that I think gets lost in the whole issue of transgender bathrooms. You know, a lot of well-meaning folks, even maybe friends of ours that we go to church with, might say, look, you know what, what's the big deal? You know, a lot of these bathrooms are single stall. How is this really going to affect me and my family? Well, this is so much bigger than a single bathroom issue. And you hit the nail right on the head, Tony. If your grandmother, your aunt, your uncle, someone who is in one of these facilities, if this law does continue to go into effect and begins being widely implemented, it will mean that those people will not have the right to privacy in their own rooms. We're not talking about a common bathroom. We're talking about in their own room. They will not be able to request a roommate who is of the same biological sex. They will be subject to the whims of that person's self-identification.
And if people begin to talk about it or raise questions about it, they run the risk of being slapped with a fine and thrown into jail potentially.
Absolutely. And remember, this is not talking about being mean or rude to people. This is just talking about using biologically correct and accurate pronouns, male and female. But instead, these individuals who are suffering from gender dysphoria, they're confused about their biology and their gender, they're going to be able to dictate how other people have to speak. And I can't think of a single other time in American history where we have actually threatened to throw people in jail if they don't use the language that we want to be used.
Wow, you talk about Orwellian. I mean, that's what this is. Wow, incredible. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us. Look forward to seeing you this weekend at the Values Voter Summit.
Thank you, Tony. Look forward to it.
All right, Jonathan Keller from the California Family Council. That's the only way the left can succeed in reengineering society. They have to use the force of government. They have to. All right, when we come back, we're going to be opening up the phone lines here on Washington Watch. Who's coming to Values Voter Summit? Are you coming? Give me a call. Don't go away. We're back after this.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org.
In a free country like ours, it's easy to forget that slavery still exists. Human beings are being trafficked and sold for sex against their will. Human trafficking is a horrifying scourge that continues to haunt America, particularly through the proliferation of illegal online transactions between traffickers and buyers. As part of the FRC Speaker Series, Congresswoman Ann Wagner discusses congressional anti-human trafficking initiatives and how the conservative community can best be engaged in combating this horrific crime. Congresswoman Wagner, who introduced highly anticipated legislation in April that allows states and victims to fight online sex trafficking, focuses on online sex trafficking via Backpage.com and other websites, and confronting the demand for sex trafficking in American culture. Find out more about Congresswoman Wagner's recent legislation and ways you can help stop trafficking at frc.org/speakers. Again, that is frc.org/speakers.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right. Are you coming to Values Voter Summit? Are you? What do you hope to see? 866-372-7234. I just got word we're going to have a special guest. President of the United States is going to be there with us for the Value Voters Summit this year. So, President's going to make it. I hope you can make it as well. 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234, the number to call to get on the conversation this afternoon. The whole issue of religious freedom, all right? This is fundamental, and I think what is catching the left off guard about is, and I touched on this with Congressman Mike Johnson, is that, and I reminded a reporter of this today, that the president campaigned on this. You remember the first policy thing I remember him talking about was the Johnson Amendment, because he felt like that communicated that he would be in support of religious liberty. Now, the Johnson Amendment dealt with the tax status of churches and nonprofits being able to speak into the political realm. In exit polling after the election, 59% of Trump-Pence voters said that they voted for the president based upon the GOP's party platform on religious liberty and life. That's I mean, that was a compelling factor in how people voted in this election. And so what the president has done is he's actually followed through on that. That I know that's rare. That's rare for a presidential candidate who ran on these issues like this to actually do them once they're elected. And he has. And that's what's caught, I think, the left off guard. First, I don't think they didn't think they were going to lose the election. They didn't think they were going to lose. And so that shocked them. And then they had a guy who was never really known as being a conservative who actually kept his word and has been undoing the destructive policies of the Obama administration. So they're incensed. But here's what we've got to do. We've got to continue to push, to continue to stand, to continue to advocate, to not be complacent, to not grow silent. It's critical. We have a narrow window. That's why the Values Voter Summit is called Seize the Moment. We have a moment. We have to seize it. I don't care what kind of fit the left throws. Let them throw a fit. Let them get down and do their temper tantrum. Elections, this is what happens. They told us just to get over it. Barack Obama was elected president. He could, you know, his pen and his phone. Well, Donald Trump won the election. And he's undoing the destructive, harmful policies of Barack Obama. All right, let's go to the phone lines, 866-372-7234. Let's go to Kentucky where Joseph is on the line. Joseph, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes, thank you for having me. My question is, why don't they prosecute these people that put the wrong names, their descriptions? If a man claims that they're a woman and they put that on the government form, that's a felony.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't that being prosecuted? And if they're confused about their gender, I know of a number of genetic anomalies, but they still have the chromosomes. They could test chromosomes to tell male and female.
That's a good question, Joseph. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if they are or not. I do know, and this is I think I've made this point on the program before. When it comes to, let's say, you're going to fly somewhere. And you get your ticket online, and you've got to identify your gender. There's only two, male and female. You see, when it comes to security, when it comes to things that are important, they don't play games. And that's interesting. I'm actually going to make a note of that, Joseph, and I'm going to find out if there have been any cases where people have put the wrong gender on a government form, because you're right. You know, depending on what the form is you fill out, there's a penalty for lying, for committing a fraudulent act. So anyway, I'll check on that. Interesting, Joseph. Thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Mississippi where Kevin is on the line. Kevin, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi.
Kevin, you there?
Yes, I am.
I'm good. How are you?
Very well.
Go right ahead.
I was curious as to whether the SPLC is a tax exempt. Are they some sort of 501c3 or something like that?
They are. They are tax exempt.
Are the donations to the SPLC tax deductible?
They are.
Well, I think that this, their status needs to be looked into.
Well, they, I mean, again, I go to, you know, I think, you know, they have a right to exist. Now, what they don't have a right to is to be, you know, hold themselves out as something they are not and have the media, hold them up and the government use them. And that's why we're seeing the government begin backing away from them, government agency by agency moving away from them, because the deal's up. They know. People are beginning to see what they are, that they are a left-wing activist organization. Kevin, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening to Washington Watch. You know, even though they get an F rating with, I I forget which philanthropic organization that rates all the groups. They give them an F because of the amount of money they raise and what they do with it. Again, I'm not for taking away their right to do that. They can raise money. I think if people are foolish enough to give them money when they've, I mean, $350 million offshore. Look, people want to do that. I just think that people need to know. But I don't think that they need to be given a status from our government and from the media to begin to be able to label their political opponents. I don't think it should be that way. All right, let's go to Texas where Isaac is on the line. Isaac, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello.
Yeah, go right ahead, Isaac.
Hey, just want to make a quick comment regarding the kind of the sexual immorality in the nation. If we want to, in my opinion, if we really want to combat transgenderism, homosexual marriage, polygamy, these concepts that are leading our nation away from traditional marriage, I think really what we need to do is combat pornography as a society. It's done in Australia. You know, they actually managed to, well, don't quote me on this, but I believe they've actually managed to start addressing that issue. And we can as a nation, too. We need to, if we can take specifically at least get rid of internet pornography, that would cause a huge blow to this kind of this sexual confusion that's going on in our nation. And people will start over time, over the years, to start thinking rationally again. Because right now we're so warped. We have such a warped view. These terrible lifestyles are actually viewed as normal, you know, through these mediums. And that's why it's so difficult for people to actually kind of come to the realization that, hey, this is not a normal lifestyle. This is not something that happens all the time. And I think really step one should be, and I know that gets into freedom of speech issues and things, and yeah, we need to debate about it, but I really and truly believe the best way to attack, you know, transgenderism, homosexual marriage, and things like that is through pornography.
I don't disagree with you, Isaac. I think what has happened is pornography has corrupted our understanding of human sexuality. It's a part of it. It's not all of it, but it is a large part of that. And it has taken what God has intended to be something that is fulfilling, something that is honoring to God, something that is beautiful within the confines of marriage, and it's been corrupted. And it has led because and I believe the reason that it has led to these other configurations of perversion and that you've described is that once you unless you enjoy it within the confines of as God intended it, you actually can't enjoy it. It's not satisfying. It's not rewarding. It's not fulfilling. And so you engage in other behavior to try to find that fulfillment that is right there all the time within the parameters that God had erected for human sexuality. And that's why it's so important that we tell our kids that this is, look, this is not, and I was having this conversation with some youth this weekend about, actually it was some older youth. I said, you know, we always thought that God was just saying you can't do this, you can't do that, trying to be restrictive. But what we find out is that what he's saying is this is where the fulfillment is. He's doing it for our own benefit and our own good. And Isaac, to your point, actually Utah has begun addressing it. In fact, the governor of Utah, it's probably been maybe 2 years ago, declared a public health crisis regarding pornography. And the Republican Party platform does the same, because I actually helped write that portion of the platform. That is in the party platform, that we need to look at this issue of pornography as a public health crisis. And that's not some kind of religious thing. You actually, I think it, I don't know if it was, I forget which publication, if it was Time or one of them had a front page article about the crisis being created by pornography, the health crisis. And it wasn't coming at it from a moral standpoint. It was coming at it from a standpoint of what it's doing to young men. Anyway, good call, Isaac. Thank you so much. All right, let's go back home to Louisiana, where John is on the line. John, welcome to Washington Watch.
How you doing, sir? I think that man was right on the pornography, but that's not all of it. If Christians would stand up, and I'm gonna use an example, that show on TV called The Voice, when mm-hmm. they had these spiritual person in the daytime in this church and a cross-dresser at night, if they would actually boycott some of those shows and then let it be known what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right. What we watch, where we shop, where we spend our money, it has to be consistent. And that's a, you know, honestly, that's a part of operating and living out our faith. Not just at church, not just at home, but in the marketplace, how we spend our money, what we watch, what we go see, how we entertain ourselves. And there's a great app I've talked about, I haven't talked about it in a while, but secondvote.com tells you where a lot of these businesses and places, how they use their profits. And oftentimes it's against us and the values we stand for. So it's a good way good guide for shopping. All right, I'm going to try to work another call here. Let's go to St. Louis where Jimmy is on the line. Jimmy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. I appreciate you having me on the show. I wanted to make a comment on some of the things you addressed with the organization that is attacking Christians and the government using them and them backing out now. And you're saying how, you know, they can exist and they have the freedom to do that. And, of course, they do. But where the left is now being attacked, or they're finding themselves in a situation where Christians have been put on, is an example of an article I just read today about a coffee shop owner who was homosexual in the state of Washington, was seeing Christians pass out anti-abortion flyers outside of his coffee shop, and then they came in to grab a cup of coffee, and he was highly offended, and he cursed at them, and he kicked out those Christians because he said that he was highly offended and he did not want their kind in his coffee shop. And we've seen this from the other viewpoint of the Christian baker or the someone who refuses to pronounce a Christian a gay wedding or making a gay wedding cake, and the left flips out and they say that's bigoted and that's rude and it's not fair, and so then they sue these people. And then with the same situation happens on the other side, and the truth is that coffee shop owner who's homosexual has the right to refuse service, the freedom right. to do that.
Well, it's just so, like the ones that refused to make the first lady's dress.
Exactly.
The designers. They didn't want to do it because they didn't agree with Donald Trump's policies. And you know what? I think they have that right.
In the same way, though, is that we find ourselves, the left is finding themselves in the same situation.
Yeah.
As,
hey, Jimmy. Sorry. I got to go because the program's over and they won't let me stay. So listen tomorrow, and we'll get to you a little earlier. All right, folks, out of time. But Values Voter Summit coming up. Check it out, TonyPerkins.com. Until next time, remember what the Apostle Paul said. Keep standing. That's the short version.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.